Welcome to Blogs on Tape. Today's post is Bite-Sized Dungeons, written by Marcia and originally published in November of 2022 on her blog Traverse Fantasy at traversefantasy.blogspot.com. Note, this post makes heavy use of explanatory diagrams that cannot be translated to audio. Marcia's text explains her process well, but the diagrams are helpful. And if you can, I encourage you to look at them in her original post. A free workbook accompanying this post is available for download on itch.io. Bite-Sized Dungeons. I just read an article by Yora of Spriggan's Den about extrapolating a scheme for an 18-room dungeon from the procedural generation rules in BX, 1981.
Footnote 1, Yora. May 20th, 2022, the post Monsters and Treasure in the BX Dungeon on Spriggan's Den. End footnote.
As Yora points out, 18 rooms is a great size for a mid to large dungeon or for a floor of a multi-level dungeon, and the checklist of rooms makes it easy to make sure that the final product has a variety of interesting play interactions. But being as large as it is, it can still be a tall order on the fly. My first thought was, having read nothing but the 1974 edition of D&D for over a year, the procedural generation rules for dungeons must be simple enough compared to its successor that the number of rooms would necessitate be smaller. It turns out that this is not the case, but hey, if you could condense the typical D&D experience into just a handful of rooms, why not? It would help make dungeons in a jiffy, and it would make it easy to make large locales out of modular parts. This approach is superficially similar to the five-room dungeon method created by John Four, but it is distinct. I agree with my friend Gus L.'s assessment of the five-room dungeon, namely that the method is not centered on designing locations, but on writing a short narrative.
Footnote L. Gus. March 29th of 2021, So You Want to Build a Dungeon on All Dead Generations. End footnote.
Each room of the five-room dungeon is not a room to explore, but a scene to play through. The five-room dungeon is, in this respect, a railroad module to guide the players through a session, with challenges that play into character strengths or fulfill narrative goals. In contrast, the method I suggest here is geared towards making a compact but fleshed-out dungeon to be explored and investigated. It is predictable enough as a structure to feature mainstays of D&D gameplay, but the possible contents of the place are completely variable, as are the possible ways in which players will choose to interact with them. Here's hoping, anyway. Statistically average dungeon. Let's start with an 18-room dungeon, like the template designed by Yora, except following the original D&D's broader, or perhaps vaguer, guidance. 3 monster rooms with treasure, 3 monster rooms without treasure, 2 unoccupied rooms with treasure, 10 empty rooms. This is much more sparse, theoretically speaking, than the statistically average dungeon of BX. But BX offers much more specific rules than OD&D. The 2 unoccupied treasure rooms are now split between 1 trapped treasure room and 1 hidden treasure room. And some of the empty rooms are now booby-trapped, 2 of them, or assigned special features, 3 of them, leaving only 5 truly empty rooms with respect to dungeon interactivity. Keep in mind, though, that this is not because there is necessarily different expectations between the two methods. Rooms in OD&D are meant to be booby-trapped or honeypotted or whatever. It's just that the book wants you to figure that out yourself. But with the simpler generative scheme, we have better grounds to reduce the product into something more bite-sized. Instead of 18 rooms, why not 6? That's an hour of exploration at a minimum, probably closer to 2 hours, which means approximately 1 random encounter and 1 torch spent, if your torches last 1 hour each. Finally, each such locale can be squished together as modules to form larger ones as desired. Bite-sized dungeon. 6 rooms. 1 monster room with treasure, 1 monster room without treasure, 1 unoccupied room with treasure, 3 empty rooms. That's all. Easy peasy. Simple to grasp, simple to plan. The only thing I've fudged is the ratio of unoccupied rooms with treasure. There is technically one of those for every 9 rooms, but I think it's handy to have a treasure for which you have to be a bit more creepy or crawly about, as opposed to the ones guarded by monsters, which would probably involve some persuasion, trickery, or brute force. We expect unguarded treasure to be either well hidden or trapped, and this is likely going to depend on the dungeon's setting, rather than going off an all-sizes-fits-one checklist. Still, BX has a trap quota, so we can do something like that here. Roll 1-4 for which unoccupied room, including the one with treasure, has a trap. This determination is referee side, prior to actually playing the game, so it's less of a requirement and more of a writing prompt. This time, the treasure is trapped, rather than just hidden or whatever. I expect it to be something that can change as the dungeon is developed, or otherwise something that just inspires the creative process. When including random encounters, there are about 3 or 4 sets of monsters that the adventurous party will meet as they explore the dungeon. 2 of these, as indicated on our recipe, are non-random or non-wandering. In such a small space, this already gives us a lot to work with. The monsters guarding the treasure could be of an opposite faction as those without, or those two could be part of the same team, but are both harassed by wandering monsters, alongside having, surely, some exploitable feelings about their comrades in the other room. No matter how many rooms you're working with, there's always room for drama. I think empty room is a misnomer, or at least a missed opportunity, that rids a dungeon of exploratory interest. This is something that BX has tried to relieve by replacing some empty rooms with special rooms, 1 out of 6, that have weird features like puzzles, tricks, or spells. It's not bad advice, such that you could well replace one of the empty rooms above with a special room. Then you need only roll for which out of the 3 rooms are trapped, D3, since now one of the previously empty rooms are special. But the phrasing leans into the idea that the other empty rooms have nothing going on. Indeed, OD&D calls them uninhabited, not empty. At the very least, they're potential stages for random encounters. More generally, though, they are distinct rooms in a lived place, and you don't make rooms to be unused unless you're building some sort of McMansion. This is mostly a question of set dressing, though, which is a matter of figuring out the ecosystem of the dungeon. By the way, though, notice that there are 3 broad categories of rooms: inhabited rooms, trapped rooms, and empty rooms. That in itself is a very handy scheme. The typical ratio is 2-1-3, and that's what we're working with. But my friend Emmy Verti designs her dungeons by creating sections of 3 rooms, 1 of each type. That's for her to write about, though. I'm just peer pressuring. Edit. I peer pressured her so hard that she published her draft before mine. Check it out in the links below. Bite-sized layout. I think most of y'all are familiar with the idea of jacquesing the dungeon, so I won't linger on this point for long. A linear layout is boring. It is more fun for there to be branches and loops and levels than for there to be none of that. A dungeon with 6 rooms is maybe a bit small to have distinct levels, though you could make a multi-level dungeon of 6 rooms each. But the others are more immediately intuitive. Branches are the easy part. Just connect some rooms to more than 2 other rooms, entrance and exit. Loops are more challenging. How many loops should there be in such a small space? Let's think of it in terms of connected points, nodes on a graph. For 6 nodes, there have to be at least 5 connections in order for each node to be connected to at least 1 other node. Thus, for there to be at least 1 loop in the dungeon, there have to be at least 6 connections. This is pretty handy, to have six rooms and six connections, some of them doors, others some of them corridors. There could totally be more than just one loop, but here we're basically talking about the minimum, where any deviations represent extra time and effort. Let's look at a couple abstract layouts. You could totally randomize how specific rooms are connected to each other, but you'll more likely want to reorganize the rooms based on what makes sense for the dungeon as an intentionally designed or naturally formed and lived-in place. These are just to imagine possibilities. Why not roll for one using a d10? And, of course, arrange the actual physical placement of rooms to taste. Graphic. 10 potential layouts of 6 nodes and their connections. End graphic. I came up with these by drawing simple polygons. A triangle, a square, a pentagon, and a hexagon. Each polygon is made up of a different number of vertices, and thus has a different number of leftover vertices, rooms, if we subtract from 6. A pentagon has only one possible layout, having exactly one possible placement for a leftover vertex. A square is slightly more complex, with 2 leftover vertices. You can either separate them or keep them together. If you keep them together, you must choose between connecting them in a line or connecting both of them to the same vertex of the square. A triangle is the most complex, having 6 such permutations for its 3 leftover vertices. I got rid of the hexagon because it was just a plain loop. Once you have a layout, you can assign rooms for the different vertices. You could roll a die for which room has an entrance, or roll 2 dice for 2 entrances, having a 1 in 6 chance of just 1 entrance. You can determine the length of different connections, whether they are just doors or if they have corridors of certain lengths. Roll 1d6. 1 to 3 is a doorway, 4 to 5 is a 1-turn length corridor, 6 is a 2-turn length corridor. Also, a roll of 1 could be a stuck door. Using flux space to represent the space between rooms, if any exist.
Footnote, Whalen, Nick, L.S., July 9th, 2017, Flux Space in Dungeons, on Papers and Pencils. End footnote.
There are a lot of ways to handle and generate all this information, but on a small scale, it's pretty convenient. Bite-sized experience. Our statistically average 18-room dungeon has 5 treasure rooms, 3 guarded, 2 unguarded. Treasure in OD&D is generated by dungeon level, representing the difficulty of the dungeon relative to character level. 1 treasure hoard in a level 1 dungeon is generated as follows. 1 to 600 silver pieces. This is 10 to 60 experience points. 1 to 600 gold pieces. 100 to 600 experience points. 5% chance of 1 to 6 gems or jewelry. 5% chance of a magic item. I have not initially included the XP value for gems or magic items because they are so rare per horde, and magic items are not meant to be sold. At least, they don't have listed prices. Considering only coins, there is a value of 110 to 660 gold pieces / XP per horde. That is an average of 385, 350 plus 35. Therefore, our statistically average 18-room dungeon has an average total gold piece / XP value of 1,925. That's not even enough to level up the average starting character, much less a whole group of them. Gems help us out a bit. If there are gems in the hoard, they are worth, on average, about 817 gold pieces or experience points. However, if there is just a 5% chance of there being gems, that might as well be about 40 gold pieces of value. For 5 treasure rooms, that's about 200 gold pieces, which brings the total potential value of our statistically average dungeon to 2,125 gold pieces or experience points. This is to say, we could comfortably assume our statistical average dungeon has enough gold pieces for one character, but still definitely not for a group. On the flip side, it will take 90 rooms total, for there to be enough treasure for a 5-character party. This does not count experience from encounters, which is an order of magnitude greater in OD&D than in subsequent versions, but which is difficult to calculate, since OD&D does not offer guidance for how many monsters should appear in dungeon encounters. But if a dungeon level 1 encounter is balanced toward level 1 characters, and each character might get 100 experience points from an opponent of equal force, that might mean the level 1 dungeon has an extra 4,500 experience points. 6 static encounters plus 3 random encounters balanced with respect to 5 players. This means our 18 rooms have experience points for 3 characters, So we need 30 rooms for 5 characters, or 6 rooms, 1 hour of exploration for 1 character. Huh? Of course, post-OD&D XP for monsters is negligible at 1/10 the previous amount. 4,500 XP becomes 450 XP, going from 67%, about 2/3, to 17% of the total XP, about 1/6. This aligns well with the guidance in BX that monsters should account for 25% of XP, as mentioned by Yora. Anyway, we will proceed considering only treasure XP, since monster XP depends on your preference. Should the 6-room dungeon contain the same value as our statistically average dungeon? Or should it have about 1/3 to account for its reduced size? This really is more a question about pacing the game than anything else, considering how long Gygax's weekend games used to be versus how short our own sessions tend to be. I think that hiding some 2,000 XP in a smaller space is fair, ignoring monster XP. Gus L. is a strong believer in dungeons having enough treasure for everyone to level up, and in encumbrance systems that will let characters carry that many coins or treasure. That might mean hiding XP value from 6,000 to 10,000. This question is one of both level design as well as game design, insofar as both contribute to the overall course of a campaign.
Footnote, Dwiz, May 19th, 2021, Game Design versus Level Design on A Night at the Opera, end footnote.
I like my coin bag system for exchange, encumbrance, and experience, so I will work with that as an example. It is handy since characters need 100 XP to level up, which is a nice round number.
Footnote B. Marcia, October 3rd, 2022, Exchange, Encumbrance, Experience, Reconstructing D&D's Economy, on Traverse Fantasy, end footnote.
If you want 4 characters to level up, that is 400 XP. This can take the form of 400 copper coin bags, 80 silver coin bags, or 8 gold coin bags, or treasure of equivalent value. We can say that our treasure rooms have 1 to 6 units of gold-grade treasure, such that there are 2 to 12 units in the whole space, equivalent to 100 to 600 XP, but distributed along 2 dice. Those are the major treasures. Then, as a treat, there can be some silver-grade or copper-grade treasures strewn about in the other rooms. For example, there can be a bag full of copper coins in a trash can or in a drawer. That should be easy enough for everyone to carry and for them to level up after returning to town. Still, this is only if you want that much treasure. You could just as well put 1 gold-grade treasure in each treasure room, which is easy enough to remember, and, like before, is enough for 1 character. Finally, treasure does not have to strictly be treasure. You can replace the treasure with whatever MacGuffins you want to seek out, and you don't even need 2 treasure rooms. I'm just working within the constraints and expected playstyle of old-style D&D, as well as how the rulebooks recommend the referee to design dungeons. You probably realize that, rather than me telling you to do something, this is just me exploring a new way of doing something based on an old way of doing the same thing. And moreover, this is more of a math problem for me than a way that I really play. Just in case. Edit. This whole time, I said that a first-level dungeon horde had 100 times d6 gold pieces, when it actually just had 10 times d6. This means the average horde has an XP value of 70 without gems, or about 110 with gems. By extension, the 18-room dungeon only has 350 XP without gems, or about 550 XP with gems. That is downright dismal, and I don't think works out with modern play sessions and party counts. So let's pretend it said 100 times d6 anyway. End edit. Procedural dungeon generation. This is the total order of operations. 1. Pick one of the layouts out of the 10 above. Rotate to taste. 2. Determine length of connections. 3. Determine entrances. 4. Determine which rooms are occupied, 1 guarding treasure. 5. Determine which unoccupied room is special. 6. Determine which non-special unoccupied room has treasure. 7. Determine which non-special unoccupied room is trapped. 8. Determine values of treasures. Below is an example. I rolled one of the triangle layouts and determined the length between each of the rooms. These were kind of surprising, lots of corridors. Then I determined that there were two entrances, basically on opposite ends of the place. The entrance on the back is guarded, and there is a room next to the other entrance with treasure guarded by monsters. Between the two entrances, there is some sort of special room. There is a treasure in the room connected to the special one, but it just happens to be booby-trapped. Graphic. A node diagram of the dungeon just described. End graphic. As an experiment, I generated another random dungeon and plugged it into the entrances of the one above. Again, all of the connections were corridors for some reason. Theoretically, half of them should just be doors. I decided to remove two of the entrances and turn them into connections with the other module. Then I determined the length of those two new connections. Now we have a 12-room dungeon. Graphic. The node diagram above has been expanded, with gray numbers for the new rooms. End graphic. Since the output is basically a point crawl, you could reorganize and illustrate it as an actual map of the place. I'm just not an artist, so I won't show that step. Conclusion. Usually, you're supposed to figure out the theme and purpose, etc. of the dungeon prior to actually designing it. This should be the first step, and I've tried to hint at that throughout this post, but since my focus for this post is just the parts about organizing or scaling a dungeon, all the other stuff is in the proverbial background. You should decide for yourself how small or large a dungeon should be based on the needs of your campaign and the game world which your characters inhabit. But this solution would work quite well for me as someone who prefers to run, or tends to play in, one-off sessions. Hopefully, this method produces fleshed-out, bite-sized, and engaging environments without taking too much time to develop, and without any railroading of the players. Here are some other posts focused more on the hard part of dungeon or adventure design: the setting. Kemp, Arnold. January 18th, 2016, Dungeon Checklist, on Goblin Punch. L. Gus, March 29th of 2021, So You Want to Build a Dungeon, on All Dead Generations. Lawrence, Ben, October 2nd of 2022, My Process, on Miserian's Garden. Malashevsky, James, September 4th, 2008, Gygaxian Naturalism, on Grognardia. Najwera, Diogo, September 29th, 2017, How to Never Describe a Dungeon, on Old Sculling. Stuart, Patrick, January 20th, 2017, How I Make an Adventure, Part 1, on False Machine. Verte, Emmy, October 9th, 2022, 12 Angry Rooms, on Spooky Action at a Distance. Finally, if you are not familiar with it, I have just released my free 1974 retro clone, Fantastic Medieval Campaigns, on Itch. Please check it out if you're interested in my reference material, since I've long abandoned the original booklets due to them being more difficult to read. That was Bite-Sized Dungeons, written by Marcia and read by Nick L.S. Whalen. Blogs on Tape is a project to make great RPG blogs more accessible. It's a community project that you can contribute to by getting in touch with me to share specific blog posts you think would make for good reading material. I don't read as many blogs as I used to, and I'm sure I miss out on a lot of good stuff. You can get in touch by email, ls@paperspencils.com. And in any event, thank you very much for listening.